Good evening. This is Carolyn S. And I apologize, my landline is ringing now, but we're just going to let it ring. And I am one of you. I think I was born a compulsive overeater. I think at a very young age, I went to food. I was like, 2, 3 years old, and I used drawers, and the bottom kitchen cupboards, to make steps so I could get up onto the counter to make my own Kool-Aid. And I will guarantee you it was not the properly measured amount of sugar. I don't know if we can name actual foods, but I used to take a piece of white bread and I'd squeeze it in my hand and it would go back to dough. And so I would sneak it and go eat it. So I've been sneaking food since I was very young. And I even ate... My mom, we didn't have a toaster when I was a kid, and we used a broiler on the oven. And once in a while, my mom would burn toast. And I'd say, oh, I'll take it out and give it to the birds. Well, I ate the burnt toast. I also didn't mind eating all of the other things that got burnt. Nobody else wanted them. And so it started very early. And then when I was in seventh grade, my parents were concerned. I was about 25 pounds overweight. And my parents decided that they needed to do something about my weight. So they took me to a doctor and... they prescribed diet pills. Well, I'm 77 years old, and those diet pills were simply speed. So I was on them for a while. I really, I don't remember how long it took me to lose 25 pounds, but I did. And so then things were good, supposedly. So then we moved again, and geez, within... I would say a couple of years, I started using other things to keep my weight down, which happened at that time to be smoking. Both my parents smoked, so I actually just stole their cigarettes and I smoked. Then, it wasn't probably 10th and 11th grade that, on the weekends, we drank, but I was always on a diet. And when I would put down the food, my pattern is I try to do something else to soothe that discomfort that I had dealing with life. I don't think my life was a whole lot different than anybody else's. It's kind of a male-dominated family. And my dad was a little heavy-handed, but, back in the 50s and 60s, I don't think that was terribly uncommon. But anyway, it was always a diet or working to try to make my waist thinner or smaller. I didn't have a great waist, but, I looked pretty good. And I used both cigarettes and then, little drinking on the weekend to deal with typical teenage stuff. And so I got married. I married someone, that I really loved, but the thing that we probably had most in common was eating and drinking. It was pretty much on the weekends. I knew I could not drink every day or I'd become an alcoholic. I do believe that is somehow genetic. I come from a family, there was obesity in it, and there was alcoholism. Also, one of my grandpas. And I think, you know, most of my mom's brothers and sisters were all addicted to smoking. And, you know, I just believe that, you know, it runs in our family. So got married, had kids, kept doing diets. I would go, you know, I might have gone up 30 pounds. So then I might go on some crazy diet, lose 20. I tried, oh, I don't know if any of you guys ever heard of a cabbage soup diet. I did that. There was a vinegar lecithin thing. I did the Pan ways. Actually, probably three of them. Probably the healthiest was called Counterweight, and General Mills did it. And so one day you would eat like you would be able to eat once you were at that weight. And then the next day you would eat more like a, you know, a diet amount to lose weight. But, you know, I'd go to my doctor and he'd say, you know, you really have to lose some weight. Here's another, you know, here, just don't eat so much. Here's a diet. And, you know, it was a 1,000-calorie diet, which is something that nutritionists really don't put us on anymore, because you're practically starving and your body goes, oh, I'm starving. I'm going to hold on to everything. So it wasn't what we would today call a well-rounded, you know, I call them food plans that help us lose weight. But in 1980, I read about OA in Dear Abby. So there I went to OA, but I used it like a diet club. Really didn't, you know, back then, I don't remember anyone ever talking about the tools. I did have a sponsor, but that meant I saw her at the meeting once a week, and our meeting was an hour. And they handed out gray sheet. So did gray sheet, and that is not a healthy food plan at all. And, you know, the mentality wasn't so much, at least not what I gleaned from it, anything about working the steps or using the tools that OA has, you know, I think very importantly, laid them out and reminded us that we have this wonderful toolbox. It's not there to sit on a shelf. It's there for us to use, to work the steps and become abstinent. Well, I diddled around with what I would call white-knuckled abstinence for about 7 years. I lost 40 pounds of probably the 60 I needed to lose. And I thought, well, you know, I did work through step five. And then I thought, you know, I'm okay. I look okay. You know, I've got this. I don't need to go to those meetings. I'm a busy mother. I've got four kids. I have a household. We had a hobby farm. You know, I just don't have time. I'm okay. Well, in 2000, I went back, and that was, I call that kind of like my 13-year slide into hell. I had high blood pressure, severe acid reflux, life-threatening sleep apnea, and my joints ached. I was so exhausted all the time, so unhappy. But I had everything I thought I ever wanted. I had four beautiful children. A husband that, you know, provided for the family. I mean, we had issues, don't get me wrong, but, you know, he wasn't out messing around. His problem was probably a little alcohol and workaholism. But that, I was like, why am I so unhappy? I just couldn't understand. So then I kept telling myself, you don't get your act together. You got to go back to OA. I knew I needed to do that. So I went back, and at that time, it was not a time where, you know, there was not a clearly defined abstinence. And I was working with a sponsor. I'm not saying I was daily working with a sponsor, but how I was working my program is focusing on, you know, a diet. And, you know, I would fall off that. And my sponsor would tell me, oh, it's okay. You did the best you could. Now, I am not suggesting by any means that our sponsor should beat us up. But it is my belief that when that happens, we need to put together some kind of a plan. And that is the most recent tool that OA has offered us. OA does not prescribe the plan. What is in your way of getting abstinent or having a happy, joyous life, you know, beyond our wildest dreams? What's going on? You know, it was like, you got to show me. Show me somebody that was actually really abstinent and doing it. Well, in Minnesota, I was probably May of 2001. It was after Mother's Day. A program came into town that actually prescribed what abstinence was and what you know, what you need to do to achieve it. And we actually, you know, worked the tools pretty much every day. And, you know, I was so desperate. I remember going to that meeting, and I was so afraid that I was going to die if I didn't stop doing what I was doing. At that meeting, they handed out chips of desire for those that wanted a different life. And I remember taking one and just knowing that I wanted to live. I wanted to be around for my daughters and my grandchildren, because my mother wasn't. My mother died at 39. She had a cerebral hemorrhage. My mother had been taking my diet pills that were prescribed by a doctor in Omaha, and we lived in Minneapolis, but she'd been taking those for like 5 years. And my mom smoked. And I believe that she had the same disease, and she was using those diet pills and smoking, and it killed her. So my mother never met my children, certainly not my grand. You know, they were not there for me when I had children. So I thought, you know what? I want to live more than I want to have those treats that I thought I had to have. And I actually started working the program, putting down the food. You know, sugar doesn't pass my lips unless it's fifth in the ingredients list. You know, I weigh and measure my food when I'm at home. I don't when I'm out at a restaurant, but that doesn't mean I go back to a buffet 10 times. It means that I order food that is, you know, close to my food plan. I've had to change my food plan several times because, and I believe as a result of probably my lifestyle and also my family. I had a bypass operation in 2018, but I was one of the lucky ones there because these other people, you know, they were talking about, you know, you can't do all this sugar and all these examples of how much sugar and common things that people don't think about, like ketchup and all this. And they weighed us when we went in, because we had to go in two or three times a week to work out, and we were monitored. And, you know, some people here, they had had bypass, and they were gaining weight. You know, I was at my maintenance weight, and I pretty much was just stable. But when they talked to them about changing what they ate and, you know, eating healthier, it was like deer in the headlights. It was like, oh, my God, I can do this, you know. And I was just so grateful.
Carolyn.
Yes.
Carolyn, just want to let you, you have 5 minutes to go.
Thank you very much. So anyway, I was grateful that I had been doing these things since June 25th, 2001. And what I would like to say is that just because I'm abstinent doesn't mean stuff doesn't happen. But what the program has taught me, and I believe it is a gift, that we are not alone. We have a higher power that we can go to whenever we need to, and that the lovely thing is that we have this amazing toolbox that help us work the steps. Working the steps, you know, 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, we get rid of what we know at the time, our resentments, our fears, and then how we've harmed other people. We share with another human being. And then we look at our character defects, which I truly believe are actually qualities, but they just sort of are on steroids. And they start to, like, a little of something is okay. Like being a little critical is good. You know, of course, if you're a brain surgeon, you got to be really, really careful and very critical with your actions. But it doesn't mean that we're perfect, but we strive to get better. And when I like to talk, it also says, I'd say that OA is helping me grow up. And that doesn't mean that I don't still need work to do, because I do. Most recently, I realized I had kind of become one of those people that thought they knew everything with program, and that, you know, I knew who needed to pitch on this or who would be really good telling the story, and got a little bit judgmental. And you know what? It was a gift. It was a gift. That's what this program is. It's a gift that helps us grow up and become better people. So many gifts. I found a spiritual community. I have a much healthier relationship with my higher power. But I will tell you, I'm not done. And that's okay, because in our program, it is not perfectionism. It is progress. And progress is not a straight line. It's like a mountain range. You know, you go up and then something happens. You might come down a little bit, and sometimes it's maybe down more. And then you go back up. It's not a straight line. And I will say that I am so grateful that this is the disease that I got, because I know people that got other diseases that there isn't a way to be in remission. And so I am grateful for this, not only that we have remission, but it's like a way to be, like what Dr. Bob said, you know, it's all about love and oh gosh, I'm like losing this. But it's loving your fellow man, and it's service. It's service to others and ourselves. And so I know that the program is hard. It's hard to go to weddings. You can't eat everything everybody eats. You know, we don't celebrate birthdays the same way. But I tell you, I'm 77. I'm still here. And that the two grandchildren I was holding when I knew if I didn't change, I wouldn't see them grow up, they turned 22 last fall. So I have made it much further than I thought I was gonna, and it's because of this program. And in dark times, it's the program and the tools that we use, my higher power, my fellows, that help me through things. Of course, my family is a big part of that, but we have this toolbox, use it. We have steps, traditions. It's a miracle. And with that, I bet my time is up. So I will say, I'm grateful for those of you on the phone. I'm grateful for people still working this program all over the world. And I'm so grateful for Roseanne, our founder. Thank you.